Welcome to Conversations for a Brave New World with Donna, Sonia and Cliff, where we bring you a global, national and local focus on gender, sexuality and feminism.
Hi, I'm Donna Bridges, Senior Lecturer at Charles Sturt University. And today, our program is about women and trades. Mostly, we'll be talking about the skilled trades. So the skilled trades are occupations within the construction, building, renovation, maintenance, mining, forestry and manufacturing industries. We know them as carpentry, electrical, welding, mechanical, occupations like that. In these industries in Australia, there are significant skills shortages, and women entering the occupations offers a potential solution to those skills shortages. This kind of work also provides women with an opportunity to work in areas where they earn much more money than they would in a traditional occupational pathway for women. Yet numbers of women in these industries is very small. So men might make up 99% of a trade or 97% of a trade, but women very rarely make up more than this 1-3%. And that's quite consistent across the Western world. So why so few women in the trades when other industries and occupations that were once male-dominated have attracted more women? So the well-understood barriers have got to do with attracting women into the trades when the skilled trades are considered to be a masculine occupation. Difficulty with employers wanting to employ women. They're used to employing men, so it might seem like a risk to employ women. There's also structural issues about the nature of the work, the long hours, a project-based environment, and so on. It doesn't lend itself to flexible work, for instance, which women may need, although the industry is very much trying to respond to a changing workforce. Women do find that there's a lack of opportunity in the industry for them and sometimes encounter bullying and harassment because of the culture of the industry. Today we're going to talk through some of those barriers, but we're also going to talk about opportunities for women and how women might find their way into the trades. My first guest today is Sarah Curley. Sarah is Project Manager of Trades Women Australia. She has 10 years experience in construction and related trades experience. Sarah has always worked in male-dominated environments, so she's qualified to talk about this subject from various perspectives. Sarah, thank you for being with us today.
Lovely. Thank you for inviting me, Donna.
Well, the first question I wanted to ask you today is, what is Trades Women Australia? What is the organisation? What is it that you do?
So Trades Women Australia was founded in 2019. We've got two arms of the organisation, which is a non-for-profit and a charity. Both aim to try and increase gender equality and empowerment for all women to access, participate and succeed in the non-traditional trades. So there's a few approaches that we use, Donna. Firstly, we want to create awareness and engagement for women to understand what trades are and the benefits of participating in trades. We also like to create effective networks and partnerships to make sure that our endeavours succeed. We also offer recruitment and retention programs. We ensure that the women are provided with opportunities with employer partners that provide cultural inclusion and really good career paths for them. But we also want to make sure that the girls, women and non-binary that are employed also are retained within the industry. We also provide education, training and coaching to non-traditional trades and organisations to provide a high level of awareness and advocacy for gender inclusion and equity. But we also do quite a bit of advocacy work at state and federal level governments.
There are quite a few initiatives at the moment. The New South Wales government has a trade pathways for women. And the Victorian government is doing that as well. Trades Women Australia are part of the Victorian government Women in Trades initiative, isn't it?
Yes. So we've been supported by Apprenticeships Victoria through their AIF fund. And the program is called Careers Plus.
And what does Careers Plus seek to achieve?
So it aims to increase participation in non-traditional trades. Part of what we do is the awareness raising piece. So we go out to schools and provide information in relation to the types of trades that girls can get into, but also the kinds of benefits and expectations that they can have in career paths within the industry. We also go into providing online sources of trades exploration as well, because we're in a digital age now. Quite a few girls love to be able to explore in their own time and in their own capacity to have a look at what is on offer. So our website is dedicated to provide that information to them. There's a dedicated area within our website that provides exploration within trades industries, but also specific trades themselves and which industries they align to. We also provide what's called networking peer support and mentoring. So that's in the recruitment side of things. We don't want girls, women, non-binary to be just placed into a position and that's basically it. We want to make sure that they're supported, especially throughout their first 12 months. The networking peer support can be online, but also face-to-face. So they get the chance to talk to other girls that might be in a different trade and they can, you know, create friendships and networks within the industry. The mentoring side of things is really beneficial because they're paired up with a tradeswoman who has had a good level of experience and does provide the kinds of support systems and advice that girls particularly need in their first few years. That's offered up until qualification stage. We work with employer partners through the Careers Plus program. They go through an approval process with us to make sure that they provide the right supports and facilities, but they offer genuine support for women to progress and have meaningful careers within their organisation.
And would you say that a lot of people in construction companies want to employ women as tradespeople to take them on as apprentices?
Yeah, to a certain extent, I think there's still a little bit of bias and stereotypes out there. So there might be a few barriers in relation to recruiting women. However, we do find that there's quite a few employers that do reach out to us, but they don't really sort of take into account the kinds of supports and mechanisms and requirements that are required to be able to take them up. So there might be instances where it's really quite obvious that they don't have the right setup yet. So they might not have the right facilities, even female toilets, but it also might be a cultural issue in there might be support for gender representation within their organisation. The kind of culture that they provide is still lacking or might be a little bit more traditionally based, where women can tend to feel isolated. They could be exposed to a higher level of poor behaviour from the people in their team. So that kind of thing that we go through in the approval process, and if the employer doesn't meet that criteria, we tend to suggest some support mechanisms for them in order for them to get ready.
So as well as providing mentors for the apprentices themselves, you also provide support for employers.
Yes, that's correct. So we do provide fee-for-service mechanisms for employers. So we offer a range of training that is usually taken up by their frontline managers, and it's all aimed to create champions of change, advocates for women within the organisation. Quite a few of the training programs that we have undertaken with organisations, there's been a real change to the minds and hearts of the managers that we work with, that they really develop a much higher level of awareness and advocacy for diversity and inclusion. We also provide unconscious bias training, because biases can sort of creep in at times where the decision making is occurring, and communications as well. So sometimes certain people can feel left out. Women can feel isolated within their particular positions, and the unconscious bias can also go into areas of sometimes certain work opportunities can go to particular people and women can miss out.
Does any of your training support leadership to deal with problems that women might encounter, such as harassment or being bullied?
Certainly. So we sort of take a holistic approach in that not only the leaders getting involved in being on the lookout for these kinds of behaviours and challenges within the workplace, but that the team is as well, that, you know, we create change in the hearts and mindsets of the team to become advocates and to also be on the lookout. So our bystander action training also helps with that as well. So, you know, team members are aware of the kinds of behaviours that do not contribute to a good mentally healthy environment, but also how to safely intervene and report these kinds of things. Overall, when it comes to our training, we work with the managers themselves because we want to make sure that the training changes the mindset and the hearts of the leaders so that they are the role models for their teams. And that is probably the most effective way to get the message across and to get buy-in from the team if the message is coming from the leader themselves.
So I guess as you've been speaking, you've identified barriers, women and girls and those that identify as non-binary, not having access to mentors. You've dealt with that through having the mentoring program, and you've dealt with issues like harassment or bullying and how to teach management to deal with that. What would you say are other barriers that women might encounter?
Sometimes that those kinds of biases of age and culture creep in. So there's quite a few experiences where our mature age candidates are looked over, unfortunately, and usually that's due to money. The organisation themselves have to fork out a little bit more for mature age candidates that are over the age of 21. But also the cultural barriers as well. And that was a bit surprising, unfortunately, because, there's instances where there's poor behaviour in the interview situation where the candidate is from a different culture, different race. English is a second language, and there's bias, and it leads to them missing all of the assets that this particular applicant can provide to the position, and they can only see the barriers. So there's been instances where racism has cropped up in the interview situation. There hasn't been very much patience with the candidate's level of English. So those are the kinds of things that we need to continue to work through with particular employers. There's also a huge issue in the lack of flexibility and opportunities part-time and job share as well. So quite a few of the employers that we work with do provide these kinds of opportunities, but when it comes to the flexibility, unfortunately, it tends to be contained within the office environment. So it's not the boots on the ground trades positions that flexibility is provided. And there's a real mindset, the traditional notions of 7 till 3. There's also the wages issue as well. So unfortunately, women tend to get paid less than men, or what reason we're still quite unaware of. There's also the tendency of opportunities going to mates, if that makes sense. So a lot of opportunities within trades are word of mouth.
Well, it sounds like there are a lot of barriers and you're pushing through those, which is great. What would be your advice to women who wanted to start an apprenticeship?
I would definitely encourage them to come to us as a first point. If they are keen on exploring a range of trades, to definitely get on our website and start exploring. Get in touch with our apprenticeship engagement officers as well, so they can email us or contact us through our website, and we can start the ball rolling from there. There's quite a few workshops that we host, but we also network with quite a few other partners who are running programs who can provide opportunities for trades tasters as well. And that's a perfect opportunity to, you know, build your confidence in forming particular activities within a range of trades. You can gain friendships and networks with other women who are undertaking the trades tasters as well. You can talk to tradeswomen who attend the workshops just to gain a bit of advice and understand their experiences within the trade. There's also opportunities of work experience and placements as well. So work experience at school level, just making sure that you're out on site and learning a little bit more about different kinds of trades that you're interested in. Get into it, explore it, try it out for yourself and see what fits for you. Yeah, just don't be scared to do it. Just try it out. If it's not for you, that's fine. But if it is, it's a really wonderful career to get into and to explore.
And if they want to get in touch with Tradeswomen Australia, can they just Google Tradeswomen Australia? And
Yes, that's right. So our website is twaustralia.com. In order to get in touch with our Careers Plus team, just email careersplus@twaustralia.com.au.
Fantastic. Thanks for talking to me today, Sarah. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Donna. Thanks for having me.
I'm part of a research team here at CSU called the Women in Trades team, and we've been investigating barriers into women getting into and staying in the trades. And we've also been looking at what facilitates women, what enables success. I'm here with colleagues Elizabeth Wolfe and Larissa Bambury, both members of the team. We're going to talk about social and cultural capital and how capital is integral to getting a job in the trades and staying in the trades. And we're going to talk about GTOs, which are like Tradeswomen Australia in that they will help you get a job. They'll support you to find an employer and will support you during the term of your apprenticeship. So capital, social capital, most people know, is a quick way to say it's not what you know, but who you know. So this is social networks, networks that provide a person with opportunities and that will help you secure a job. So maybe you know somebody in the trades, or somebody you know knows somebody, and that's a common way of getting a job in the trades. Cultural capital is a little bit different. It's about looking right and sounding right. It's about the skills and knowledge that you bring prior to getting a job, and also about the skills and knowledge that you acquire on the job. It helps you get a start in the industry, and it helps you stay there. Elizabeth, girls and women often don't have any social and cultural capital. So how does this affect their prospects and how can they get it?
Thanks, Donna. Our research has found that women without capital have a harder time getting into the trades and maintaining success once recruited. This is largely due to the fact that a lot of the pathways into trades work are informal and these young women aren't hooked into those networks. So women without capital benefit from more formal pathways, which is what we're used to in the rest of our employment sectors, most generally. However, one of the interesting things our research has found is that not only are there young women who do have capital, both social and cultural, largely from their families and friends, but also capital can be acquired. And this is a really good thing for those women without capital because they can acquire it from networks, from others, from their education and from work experience. So Sarah's right. It's about becoming familiar with the trades environment, knowing how to talk the talk and do the work. Organisations like Tradeswomen Australia and other groups such as SALT, which is supporting and linking tradeswomen, and there's another online group called Lady Tradies Australia. These groups have a nationwide focus, and so they're easy to hook into online. They promote and support and connect tradeswomen with each other, and also potential clients and employers. They run programs that assist the acquisition of capital through skills days and women sheds and information and resource days. And another useful avenue for women to find or acquire capital is through trades classes in schools that provide skills and knowledge. It's through this practical hands-on experience and opportunities to learn how to work with tools that skills can be acquired and that young women and older women even can be targeted for apprenticeships and employment. These interactions build social and cultural capital the sharing of networks, the providing of contacts, the building of skills through training and education. And through these interactions, friendships and support networks are built, and they're really important for tradeswomen. So is mentoring. And getting a good mentor in your place of employment or through your apprenticeship is a really integral in building capital, which also builds confidence.
Group training organisations are also involved in this.
Great. Thanks, Elizabeth. So, Larissa, what is a group training organisation and how can they facilitate supportive inclusion of women?
Thanks, Donna. Group training organisations are a really important element in the Australian vocational education system, and they're quite unique to Australia. Group training organisations, or also known as group training companies, and they could be community organisations, industry associations, union-based, or they could be created by a training provider, or they could actually be a company that operates for profit in like a labour hire company. And essentially, they become the formal employer of the apprentice, and they operate to place apprentices amongst host employers within a particular labour market. And so they're really important in regional Australia for helping to address regional skill shortages and actually helping to connect potential apprentices with potential employers or people who need that sort of support. But they're also important in case something goes wrong, if the employer suffers a downturn in their business, that the apprenticeship won't fail because of the failure of a business, that the group training company can help the apprentice to be placed somewhere else if they need to complete their training. And I guess the other aspect is that a group training organisation can also help, especially the ones that are related to a particular training provider, can actually help the apprentice to do their off-the-job training as well as their on-the-job training. And good group training organisations also have a role in checking in on the health and well-being of their apprentices and making sure that they are achieving their social and mental health goals, as well as actually reaching their goals in terms of their apprenticeship. And I guess the other thing to think about with group training organisations is that they can actually be very supportive to an employer, particularly when you think about a lot of the employers in these industries are small or even micro businesses that don't have an HR department, that don't have somebody who looks after gender equity in the workplace and that don't have a workplace health and safety officer necessarily. So the group training organisations can help the employer with a lot of the administrative detail of filling in the forms to get the apprentice on board or to help with details like many of the group training organisations provide their employers with a kit on how to make sure that their workplace health and safety issues are addressed and how to make sure that gender equity is explored in the workplace. So they are an essential part in this process of matching employers and employees or apprentices, and they can really be helpful for young women who want to get into an apprenticeship.
Fantastic. Thanks, Larissa and Elizabeth. I'm now joined by my co-hosts, Cliff and Sonia, to talk about some of the issues that we heard raised in the interviews. Now, Cliff and Sonia, I thought all three speakers were generally positive about women going into trades. It was just a couple of times Sarah talked about issues around employment bias, unconscious bias, and even problems of racism, ageism, flexible work, which women require not being available, and a developing issue with equal pay.
Thanks, Donna. I think in some ways the issues that have been raised are pretty consistent, isn't it? Like when you think about other minoritized and marginalized groups, they are fairly consistent in terms of the role stereotypes impact the way employers see people and the opportunities that you get. One of the things that stuck out to me is the lack of female toilets on sites, which might seem really basic, but at the same time, it's something which you really need a lot of active thinking about. And that's where unconscious bias training that Sarah spoke about can play such a huge role in educating employers in trades to be more aware about what's needed to be more inclusive and to be an inclusive employer.
When women are seen as outsiders or as a marginalised group, it's easier not to have the toilet for them. Imagine not having toilets for men. When men went to work on a construction site, there were no toilets. That would be unheard of. But it's very common not to have female toilets on site.
What strikes me is that the government wants more women in these jobs, and that's a good thing. However, I do wonder if the industry is really being held accountable for its cultural issues. And some of those things around, you know, they're talking about working long hours, workers dealing with psychological distress, and too many folks stuck in unregulated contract work. And, you know, for me, I mean, I can't see that that's a healthy situation. And I do think it's time that we address it. You know, change like that, that's needed. It won't happen overnight, but it's necessary for the sake of everyone working in the field, and men and women alike, so for both. We've got laws and legislation in place to protect against discrimination and bullying, and we just need to use them. So I think that we can create a better, more inclusive environment and demand fairness and also equal opportunities.
And I think with that, there is a dual role, because I think what you've touched on there, Sonia, in terms of laws and legislation, that's great. And that does play a role and does have an influence. But we also need societal change in terms of that visibility and representation, which Sarah touched on in terms of the mentoring program in particular. We can't be things we can't see. And that might seem really basic, but when you can't see a successful version of yourself, how are you to aspire to it and how are you to plan towards it? So I do believe there is a two-pronged approach that needs to happen here, both legal as well as social change.
Exactly. And that's that, the cultural undertones, which I think you're trying to say, and the historical cultural issues that are rife in some of those trade organisations as well.
Thanks, Sonia and Cliff. There's a lot of hope for the future that we can see there, isn't there? Next month, we've got Sonia talking about women in paramedicine. Sonia, could you tell us a little bit about that episode?
Thanks, Donna. In the past, paramedicine was predominantly seen as a male-dominated profession. But that's changed rapidly. And in fact, last year, I think we've achieved gender balance. There's actually the same amount of men doing the job as there is women. And we've actually seen that reflected through our university systems as well, with a lot more women coming through. So I've invited a couple of women along to the show to talk us about their experiences and what it's like being a woman in paramedicine these days. Should be a really interesting show.
Fantastic. See you both next time. Thanks for coming, everybody.
Thank you for listening. This show is brought to you by the Gender Network. To get involved or find out more, simply Google the Gender Network at Charles Sturt.